interrupting the current neo-Uranial, climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTW RLM 534. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed. Don't make them force you to eat the bugs. That's where they want us to go. But here, from the Department of Don't Do This at Home, like, don't be a cricket. Man cracks open skull in attempt to control dreams. The 40-year-old Russian was apparently trying to implant an electrode inside his brain at home. A man from Russia's Novosibirsk region says he's nearly died after trying to perform brain surgery on himself using a hand drill with the aim of controlling his dreams. He had some complications, folks. He said he was able to actually do a few things, but it almost killed him. I'm glad I survived, but I was really ready to die. As he said, they had real complications. They had to take him in a four-hour operation. He lost over a liter of blood in trying to get himself to be Elon Musk's competitor, I suppose. And trying to, I guess, meld with the AI, as we find AI is quite stupid, as we hear Meta admitting these things are just machine programs. There's no intelligence behind them. There's no sentience. There's no conscience. There's the trick of thinking us, getting us to think that these are more than just machine code readers. The hype behind artificial intelligence has surpassed what is actually capable of, Meta has said. So we have a little bit of artificial intelligence, a gentleman taking a hand drill to his skull to make him less of what he was. Please don't do that. I don't know. I guess there's something about scientific interest, but no, that's probably not the right way to go. Current artificial intelligence AI models are quite stupid and far short of being powerful enough to pose any form of distinct threat to humanity, Meta President of Global Affairs Nick Clegg has said. Now, I have to say, be careful of the artificial intelligence that makes decisions and turn machine off and on while you're around it. That'll kill you. That's the problem of robots. They're not real smart that way either. They just do what they're told. And if you're in the way, you can be dead quick. And so this is a hype condition. I've been talking about all this. We can't get lulled into the anthropomorphization of a machine. If that's what they want us to do, because you're going to hear some more of that as I get down the road here. They call it the machines start taking on human emotions that are just stated for them, but they're not. They're just these machine computers that, fascinating as they are and as magical as it seems they can do things and as fast as they can do those things, as I've been trying to show you and showing you, they are error-prone, and there's not a lot going to be able to remove that. And there's always going to be a check. And you've already heard the problem. They let these things loose in themselves, in the machines themselves, Here we are anthropomorphizing again. They start going into their own code and remodeling it. The people who are running it don't know what it's going to do. They don't know how it did it. And so this is a chain of evidence problem as well, if you start thinking about it that way. But so Google, Meta's coming out and saying, none of this is, don't get into the hype. And I'm asking you, don't get into the hype. It's cool, neat tools. But it's not something to lose our gourds over, or not drill our holes in our head in order to adapt to that. Google is going to let you make your own AI model through Notebook LM, and testing begins soon. So as I was telling you before, this is a real threat. That AI you think they're giving you as a toy, you don't think it has some backdoors? Absolutely, they're going to use this as the AI surveillance. But here we are, they're going to hand it to you, let you think it's the coolest thing since. Well, whatever you think is the coolest thing. Hey there, have you tried ChatGPT yet? Have you used any of those free AI image generators? Are you excited for your phone's assistant to actually become useful? Are you itching to get rich features like this on some of the best phones that are coming out in the future? Well, then you should know the future is almost nigh. After all, Google's spent probably about 75% of its entire I.O. 2023 presentation talking about AI, after which they gave 20 minutes spotlight their other products. So they're moving AI into your systems. We heard that in another broadcast. They're moving it in to look over your shoulder. It's a complete surveillance system. And it does use that AI to look around and collect data real efficiently, and then maybe even make opinions. You go back to the Meta story, which I not to go back to it, but if you read that, you say this is one of the potential problems relative to AI kind of being dumb. It doesn't really know when to not dump itself on, you know, when it's requested. It's again just an open book notebook, and Google's going to have it for you. They give you a treat, you play with it, and they have control. So again, just word to the wise and warning. The first fully AI generated drug enters clinical trials in human patients. So this is the other little bit of the other side. Remember I told you, though, it took fourth out of 4,000 or so of those two AI programs to bring medicine out or a toxic substance out. It can give you thousands and thousands, but it reduces down only to a few that might work. And then of those, only maybe one might. And I showed you one of them. All three were no good, but one had a special use. And so it takes people to go through and verify that AI is anything but more than a tool, and maybe a quick consolidator and confinement of a library or realm to look and pick through. The first fully AI-generated drug enters clinical trials. They're all excited about it. In Silico Medicine, a Hong Kong-based biotech startup with more than $400 million in funding created a drug as a treatment for idiopathic, the pulmonary fibrosis and chronic lung disease. You know, where this thing might work? Fantastic. I told you this is the way you use this. As long as you distill it down to the thing that works, then you do your proper tests. This can be a boon to new technology. Material science. Brand new materials can be invented, put together in ways that people cannot figure out altogether, but a machine just sits there and looks at all this data and just stores it and keeps putting it together and then prints it out eventually. Based on, again, algorithms, math, programs that instruct it to handle it a certain way. In fact, you heard a little bit of that in the story last week or so, when there was an AI, I think I spoke to it, so much I read here, I spoke to it, I think, that they had an AI that was able, oh, it was the toxic substances. They wouldn't let their algorithms out on how they found that, because they didn't want that to come out. Now, whether or not it actually gets out is another thing. But this is all, again, how do you program? It's just a bunch of coding conditions and the parameters of that. So human trials, cool. I think this is a cool technology. As I said before, material science maybe be a boon here, but they're taking their time. They also know they have these little problems as they go along. That's the true caution. Let's see if we can keep it becoming a tool for a benefit instead of just haphazardly going out and doing things. But along a human trials, a different type of human trial now, fed up with Biden and Trump, half of U.S. voters consider backing third-party candidate. And I found just interesting, just a little bit of an interest here. I don't really get too much behind the political parts of this. But if you look carefully at what they were talking about, it's kind of interesting who they put in the poll. And this is, again, this is a one-way misinformation. When they don't go and find everybody that might be running, you see that they're focusing in on a few to kick out others, even though I may not agree with most all of them. But a voter fatigue over a potential Trump-Biden 2024 rematch comes underway as a polling analyst for Quinnipiac University recently determined that for many voters, the status quo is a no-go. So here's your little slogan, and this is what they might move. I noticed that some Democrats are now thinking about moving into a third party, so they're prepping and pumping this part. But they go through the story, and they go through all the numbers and what's going on. It's pretty interesting. Between Trump and Biden, they're pretty close neck and neck between how it works out. Again, this could all be hype, but I also went through the list of who they want and won't go through the whole list. But I noticed, even though I've been talking against him a bit because I don't believe he's soundbite stumping, but what he does behind and has his history, watching his deeds in time, have been antagonistic to certain things that I would do, like what the production. I've read the articles about it, and then the water keepers that he's developed that we have to fight, that they just try to destroy Western water doctrine policies that have been around for 100 years and needed. It's how you get water and organized. But Robert Kennedy Jr. is not even in this list. So we see the development of a sort of election tampering in a way, in my mind. But anyway, so interesting. 50% aren't liking the status quo going in, and they're telegraphing that maybe a third party may step up. They also say that the Democrat side, actually has a little bit of advantage. I thought that was an interesting little point in this story. And when you look at the breakover, so maybe the Republicans that believe that voting something, you might want to pay attention to what the demographic of all this is going on. But going on, 50%, we move up to 2/3 of Americans don't support supply cluster munitions to Ukraine. So what I've been talking about, this thing that they're going on, they're dumping munitions over there, that the United States old munitions are just dumping it over. It's a big wasteland over there. People are not liking it, and that's great. We need to get, hopefully we have more cohesion on this, and that's a good point. 2/3 of Americans do not support sending cluster munitions to Ukraine, according to the joint poll conducted by The Economist and YouGov. And we can go through the numbers, but it's just that two-thirds of the people don't like it. What I find interesting that they still support that war, which is kind of interesting. It's not really the war, in a way. We're not fighting it as a war. I discussed that last week. This is just a political, geopolitical show, like Kabuki Theater. And the poll found the Americans are more skeptical than in the past about the good idea of a potential NATO membership of Ukraine. 42% of the respondents supported such a prospect. Those are 42% that are ignorant of history and the requirements of what's going on over there. And this is another danger. So you see inside this, we don't like cluster munitions, but we'll agree with going ahead and using Ukraine as a killing field in an experimental position. We're going to get that news here in just a second. So what I would like to see maybe more is if we can get 2/3 of these people on cluster munition, maybe we can get 2/3 of Americans together to not support the cluster bums in Washington, D.C. That would be a refreshing look as we start to realize that the government's not here for you. It's here to hurt you. It's heard of whoever is in control gets to exploit, and we don't get justice or law or none of that stuff. It's only for the few or this two-tier, three-tier type thing. And the people, the rats will play behind the scenes, and there's seemingly no way to stop it. But here we have 2/3 of the people not liking these cluster bombs. We see U.S. not planning to restore the stockpile of cluster munitions sent to Ukraine. So again, it's a dumping field. And it's a dumping field in a place where you dump a bunch of these types of munitions, and they've got a higher failure rate even of the Russians. The Russians have them too, but they've been holding back mostly, I suppose, if I've heard right. But we're not, the United States is just dumping them over in Ukraine to get them used, get them out of the way so they don't have to clean them up. So if it's true that they're not going to replace the stockpiles, then we're just looking at, this was just a big military weapons waste dumping syndicate to do whatever the future is that they want relative to these munitions that they don't want to get rid of at home, so to speak. I think that the idea here that Jake Sullivan comments on is reprehensible. If you're just dumping it on people, and then they're going to hurt people, civilians, if you will, kids, little boys and girls running around in a field, and these things trigger off because they didn't detonate at the time and blow little legs off. This is just a reprehensible condition. Where we just see that we're dumping it back. Our current plan is not to replenish that stockpile. It's rather to build up the capacity to produce the unitary round, the 155, the non-cluster munition round of the ammunition. We began this process months ago because we anticipated the need for continuing supply to Ukraine. We're not going to keep them. They're banned for most of the countries around. The United States hasn't banned it. Russia hasn't banned it. But they're not going to rebuild it. But they're going to go ahead and let Ukraine threaten people with them in the future. These are pretty insidious little bombs, too. And what is Ukraine more than a dumping ground? UK military to improve thanks to Ukraine battle lab. Britain will roll out a new combat technology faster after learning from ongoing conflict. It's just one big lab, bio lab, weapons lab. This is just a military industrial complex lab. It's fighting to the last Ukrainian. This has nothing to do with saving a democratic state. This has to do with transforming it in a number of different types of ways. we tend to think, and I say transform, we tend to think the sustainable way, but what we actually see over there is the, can I even use the word capitalists, the moneyed organizations making more profits and controlling the land to do that in many different ways, like BlackRock's and the Vanguard's and State Street's and in the banks and all that stuff. So these are, it's an economic lab as well. Yeah, but the people, all the people suffer. And if you get rid of the people, then they're not going to be in your way either. So we have a UK using Ukraine as a battle lab. I think I mentioned that they would be using this, as we saw Russia even going to help Syria. They would learn when they use their new munitions, their new technology. And so it's just, it's kind of really, it's very abhorrent. It's reprehensible, prehensile tale, reprobate and Sullivan bringing up these concepts, and it's not going to anything good. It's not going to anything that's going to change the war, if it was a war. And yet we hear, oh, this is a way to dump material and then use it as a battle. And they're finding out, the West is finding out, that Russia's got some pretty formidable things. The United States and the West do not have any wonder weapons. Just doesn't. So we have another, it's this idea from Ukraine using it as a lab. We get all of Europe now becomes this chemical wasteland lab. As the EU, we think that they're holding fast and going to protect people there. The EU to drop ban on hazardous chemicals after industry pressure. So the same politics everywhere, Monsantans and everybody else, the DuPonts, they're heavy into lobbying, and that's partly another weakness in our system. It seems to me, maybe people have other ideas, but the leaked documents show that as little as 1% of the products containing hazardous substance could be prohibited. The European Commission is poised to break the promise to outlaw all but the most essential of Europe's hazardous chemicals, leaked documents show. The pledge to quote, ban the most harmful chemicals in consumer products, allowing their use only where essential, was a flagship component of European Green Deal when it was launched in 2020. And here the conflation, the Green Deal there is actually things that pollute, not climate change, which is a conflation of pollution with this environmental fraud. This is how they pulled that through. And what we're talking about here is those forever chemicals. So the EU is highly sounding as it seems to be, will bend over and whoever, I don't know about taking the, how, whether there's bribes involved or not. How do you do that? How do you want to protect and then take that protection away? For what? Money. So they have the same bottom line as the United States in its construction, ultimately. But I don't know what more to say about that. I keep thinking, was there more to say? Yeah, well, they want to poison you. Everything is a business lab. It's a military industrial complex lab. You're the rat, you're the guinea pig, you're whatever animal they want you to be. And somewhere these psychopaths are somehow getting rewarded. And again, I don't know how much more to say. We keep continuing to allow it as a people. What I found interesting about psychopaths, a new study here apparently, it says psychopathic individuals struggle to recognize and resonate with emotion in music, a study finds. And I'm interested, I read that, I wonder, what is Bill Gates? What music does he like? Does he like music? New research published in the Cognition and Emotion Investigative, the possibility that psychopathic traits would inhibit one's ability to experience or identify emotions in music. The findings indicate that, as predicted, individuals who have psychopathic traits are less likely to correctly identify emotions conveyed in music. These researchers provides another clue to the challenges individuals with psychopathic traits may be identifying and experiencing emotion. So you may want to watch people real careful and see if they have any emotion on what you might think is an emotional passage in a piece of music. And if they don't, you might be staring at a psychopath. I wonder if maybe AI can be actually programmed to respond more or less like a psychopath. And I'm not so sure someone like Bill Gates can. Oh, is that a philanthropath? Maybe that's who he is. So all these, we may be able to have an interesting test somehow, but music and psychopathy might be identified by the guy in the corner not tapping his toe. Who knows? Who knows? But we'll have an AI project to be able to put in your iPhone to find them out. A little AI sensor that looks for that, I suppose. U.S. COVID-19 deaths overcounted by nearly a third. If we didn't already know, we now have more people coming, as I said they would, years after, to identify how it was all wrong. And maybe these psychopaths that killed us off and we allowed them to kill us off as populations around the world. I wonder whether or not they felt the emotion to the music. The newspaper has long defended the official pandemic's statistics, even suggesting the death count was low from the New York Times. Nearly a third of the U.S. deaths ascribed to COVID-19 were actually caused by something else. And you heard that from behind the woodshed and about everywhere else, that anybody had any thought about looking at this thing. It wasn't about COVID, and I told you it couldn't be about COVID. COVID is symptoms. COVID's not an active agent. So we already know that was a lie to start with. And we then talked about cooking the books and all that. So here, anyway, you can read through this. These news comes through relative to the truth. And I'm not taking, you see this, it's not a pat on the back, oh, let's take laps or whatever the heck for rewards. This was a serious defeat of the people, a defect. It's still going on. We're just talking about it still. But what they did is they just, again, we heard the story. They were just taking anything and putting symptoms of COVID-19 on it. And that was how they got their bribe money. And even the local officials accepted bribe money. And they did that by not faithfully following the communicable disease code. As I asked all of you that would listen, to make sure it happens if you ever get confronted, or to anticipate by writing a letter to identify that they had not done those things. So that you couldn't be put in, you'd be fortified to not be susceptible to whatever the conditions were that they were promoting. And that's important to start learning. As I told you, it's not about the COVID. It's about learning that they're going to lie to you and how you can take steps to protect yourself a bit, put a buffer in there. Because in the future, it gets a lot tougher, if I can anticipate a couple things here. So, the psychopaths that threw this on us, we didn't throw it off. As I said, I was hoping different, but we didn't. Operation Hindsight 2020, they figured us out. We didn't figure them out. And so here we are. And a small group of people are now saying that, you know, we're the unvaxxed and all this other thing. The problem is that society went down really badly, and that was a setup for the takedown. They did that to do what we're watching today with the economy and things, going to the cashless situation with the CBDCs and what that's going to do to us eventually. And just a response to thank you on the Twitter to respond that you're doing cash. And that's just start using cash again. Get back into that habit. I don't know why that's a problem. And if we continue to do that and we start keeping money local running, then it's more the industries that are there, the businesses, won't feel that they need to rely on electronics, the electronic transfers. And again, because it's not about that medium, it's about what that does. And it's the transfer and the relationship between the cash that you hand to someone and then the electronic attachment to a third party that decides whether or not you are insulting their obligations. And so, and thank you again for Twitter for responding. I guess I threw that out there about you're going to be viewed for your compliance with the token master, their obligation to the ESGs, and that decision will be made by them whether or not who and when how you're going to spend. Thank you for the Twitter to recognize that and to send it on to, I think, Truth Media and respond to theirs, because they've just gotten a new video, and I think I talked about it last week. And they go through this as well. It's really now becoming something to really be careful for. Give the warning. Start explaining it. Understand it. Explain it to people. This is a very convenient trap, and a large trap that they're putting people in. Cash is going to stop it. I would say we move back down into silver coin and maybe gold coin, and then we get really hard. That's called literally hard currency, hard money. So we can do that. We can go one more step away, and then we'll be bleeding off the FRN as well. But I don't think that's going to happen, but that's what we can push for. So COVID-19 overcounted. We caught it before, and now NYT's found out to be, they were the one promoting it, as we also said. And then I guess as we go through, and the COVID thing keeps coming up and keeps becoming a big ongoing ghost in the machine, the U.S. halts funding to Wuhan. Chinese facility has been the center of claims that it was the source of COVID-19, despite a lack of proof. This is a fascinating little title and lead right there, isn't it? That center of claims, just claims, again, COVID-19 is symptoms. And despite the lack of proof is the fact that they are never going to prove that, because it was never, well, first of all, symptoms is nothing, and there was never an infectious agent. What they did is, it was right in the news, right in the beginning, right in the first stories, right before, I think they said, they told us that some guy landed in Washington on an aircraft. They said that they had transmitted a protein through the world, essentially they had to send it through electronic means. That's what left the lab, was what they thought they found as the genetic string. That's underneath the Biodiversity Treaty of 1992. So this is the sharing of genomic information, not an actual virus. There is the virus here, and it was just a genetic string, and it happens to be what? A protein, not a virus, but a protein string, a spike protein string. And so the government of the United States now has to make big hay to keep focusing people that it was something real. We're going to stop this thing by stopping the funding to Wuhan lab. And we forget, well, it was the United States military at warp speed did this. Got the proofs and contracts and all from very dedicated people who are doing research. So, again, you too can contribute at some point in the future going on to bigger and better, badder things that they want to keep scaring people with. I don't see how this goes away with the way the people are and the way the society works, or actually doesn't work. So, funding was stopped to Wuhan Lab. United States Department of Health and Human Services has suspended. Oh, we only suspend it like suspenders. All funding to the Wuhan Institute of Virology with an eye, that all-seeing eye of Sauron, toward permanently defunding the lab. The HHS spokesperson confirmed on Tuesday, the facility has been accused by many in Washington of unleashing symptoms, COVID-19 symptoms on the world, despite a lack of proof. So, based on this condition, the United States will beat down on somebody on a lab, so-called. This is the focus, and there was nothing there. There's literally nothing there. It's a fairy tale, all connived and contrived from the United States government. We heard all the stories. I won't go back into it. But this is the story they keep moving along that keeps people interested. Even Congress is involved in either being duped or perpetrating this, as they keep saying, oh, there's a high likelihood that there was something coming out of Wuhan. But it was right in the news what came out of Wuhan. It had nothing to do with viral conditions. It had nothing to do with bats. It had nothing to do with any of that. It didn't even have anything to do with COVID. It was symptoms. And I wish people would go back to refresh their memory, if they don't remember that, to go find the articles, if they're still available, on exactly what we were told. Because it was easy. This was an easy one in a way, and I thought it might be in a way. Again, we had to learn how to run up in learning a little bit. But you heard, if you're listening Behind the Woodshed, then you heard me doing it. You heard me coming and predicting part of it, and then moving along and showing us where we're going to stand so the train didn't run us down, and protecting ourselves. And then some of us anticipated some things and didn't. Set it up so they couldn't be talked to, essentially, when you got a letter that they, or a non-letter that didn't say that they made a determination, you're pretty well protected in that from a mitigation imposition, because they didn't follow the law if you knew that. So people behind those of you that listen Behind the Woodshed, you knew that. How vaccination status might predict views on Russia invasion of Ukraine. Maybe another reason why we're slowing this all down and trying to get people to wean them off now the government, is because, as I had wondered, would this change because of the neurological conditions that the spike protein would cause the interference, would that also cause a problem in your perception? And it seemed the way the future goes, they would want to inject you with something that you would be more conducive to suggestion, if nothing else. And we see here in this interesting story, it's been a while now that it's been out, I want to remind us on it, how vaccination status might predict views on Russian invasion of Ukraine. Artificial intelligence, the reprogramming of your mind, a new algorithm, seem to come here in my mind. A new poll indicates that vaccine refusers are much more sympathetic, to Russia. And so they don't focus on the fact that the ones that are vaccinated are all going to say, go kill Russia. Go drop munitions and cluster bombs. So it's interesting relative to this condition here that we even have a two-thirds population that says cluster bombs may be a little bit too much. So maybe there's a little bit of hope in those that are not unvaccinated and not refuseniks. Unvaccinated Canadians are about 12 times more likely than those who received three doses to believe Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine was justified, according to a new survey by national poll firm Echoes. I won't go through the numbers, but compared to only 2% of the surveyed Canadians who said they had three doses of COVID-19 vaccine and who supported the attack, 4% who offered no view. So we do see an interesting poll where we see a shift in people's perception. In my mind, that was exactly what I would wonder would happen when you have a warp speed attack on a population to make them more compliant, to make their behavior more controllable, to get them lean or at least even agree more quickly to your position. And this is a very scary poll if it holds up, and I haven't really researched to see if there's any newer ones. So this is how they control the population. They get you to believe you can do this, then this is all set up to take you down. And they control the population even through, you saw the death rates going up. You saw that they were, COVID-19 really did nothing in large part until that warp speed attack, and then people were dying left and right. There's plenty of statistics and people that are doing the statistics to prove that out. They want to take some credit for that, but really that was avoidable up front. It was also predictable up front that the local health official could have really been heroes to protect the whole of society. But it shows you what a government will do against its people. It's war against people. There's violence against people. Look at what, the people are not liking the cluster bombs, dropping those cluster bombs over at Ukraine, but because it'll hurt kids. There's the people don't like the violence, that unreasonable violence. And yet the government doesn't care. They'll dump it on. They'll just get rid of stockpiles because it's old and needs to be gotten rid of. They have no empathy whatsoever for people whatsoever. They're, again, governments kill people. U.S. VP Harris speaks of desire to reduce the population. There's a little speech that she did in the White House has claimed she meant to say pollution in a speech touting Biden's green energy funding. Well, if you listen very carefully, the green energy funding is about population control. The green religion is about population control. So it may be a slip of the tongue. I know people pick this up for that reason. She could be talking about pollution because that's the conflation. But as we see, the government wants to kill us. The government wants to have chemicals in the environment that do kill us. The EU's not away from it. They're not the purity sanctions that are out there. You know, if they want clean environment, why are they allowing the PFASs? No, this is politics and this is economics. But most of the economics is there's too many of you and you're the problem because the green religion wants to protect Gaia, although they've never shown any authority to do that. To be representatives of that, they should be standing first in line on everything they tell you. If they want you to jump into Pele to get rid of yourself, why they should just take their squirrel suit right on into the base of it. But we don't see them doing it. So VP Harris says, reduce the population. That's exactly what the green religion wants to do. But it comes under the cover of wanting to speak to doing things about pollution. But we see in the same week here, the EU's not going to stop pollution. And it's a heavy green religion promoter. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris listed reducing Population is one of the Biden administration's areas of green investment. During a speech in Maryland on Friday, the White House has since claimed she misspoke. When we invest in clean energy and electric vehicles and reduce population, more of our children can breathe clean air and drink clean water, Harris told the audience at Baltimore's Copan State University to rapturous applause. Now, you got to parse this very carefully. Again, when you understand what they're doing with that word, in the back room, they're talking about reducing population. In the front room, they're talking about pollution. And that's that simple. And it's really kind of a neat thing to see, but it's not really out of the ordinary for these psychopaths. Literally, they would say, well, some kids are going to breathe clean air and drink clean water, and some are not. Some are going to die so that we can give that to the others. So don't underestimate the insidiousness and heinousness of this comment, even though it can be passed off as a slip of the tongue. So what about the government and the reduce the population? You know, I meant pollution. No, the government allows the continuation of dumping off the rails, as we had another incident of a hazmat train, no less. You'd think that this train would be the most protected, but I guess they're not. The hazmat train derails outside of Biden state, the state of Biden, right there in Philadelphia. Their homes and businesses in White Marsh Township were evacuated after Norfolk Southern freighter left the tracks. And they interestingly claim that it was a weather phenomenon that caused that. And I understand that. I'm not even really too worried about that one. It was heat, that hot heat you guys all had back there for a while. I think it may be still going on. Really, we got hot. It apparently expanded the metal and it caused those rails to warp. Why they can't see that when they're coming down on the train, I don't know. But this one didn't get caught. You'd think they would do that with a hazardous cargo. Apparently, the hazardous cargo is hazardous to a point, but it's not quite as bad as the Palestine bit. And so they did some cleanup. They did some deep precautionary cleaning, but it was a silicone pellets, I suppose, that they were throwing on there. But images of the derailment appeared to show a bent and twisted section of rail. CSX Rail Company told local media the crash was weather related. It was heat expansion of the rails, they tell us. But we can move down and we see here that out of a comparison, it's the derailment of the Norfolk Southern train in Palestine, Ohio, gained international attention after the initial damage, and those residents blame that on lingering effects on their own health and that of the local wildlife. As Kamala Harris says, that it's a faux pas that she said population and not pollution. When you look at this week, you got pollution killing off population. So I think she was telling the truth. But it was the heat, folks. Global warming, I'm sure. On all this stuff, for sure, right? But interestingly, and also in the same week or so here in this little interim, all these trains going off the track, what heat didn't buckle a rail line in the world this week, but over in Crimea? And we went and done it again over there trying to blow that bridge up to try and prove a point. But here's the thing about this heinousness. This is not a war about war. This is a war about public perception. This is a war that the profiteers and privateers are working to make more profit. And privately, and this is a place where weapons move from that area to other places, as they're now found everywhere in the world, it seems. But we move from a place where just the sun, and just the heat of the air can buckle transportation systems, but you go over where they're attacking a bridge that has a rail system, and that thing keeps intact and running over there in the Crimean Bridge. But Kiev's gloating over Crimea bridge deaths, monstrous. Again, you look at this, and the point about the United States allowing this becomes pretty monstrous. It is pretty heinous. Now, the Kremlin says the Ukrainian terrorist attack claimed 2 civilian lives with a child that left injured, 14-year-old girl, I understand. There, you'll find if we read through this, there was no purpose. It is just a civilian corridor. When you look closer, they don't use. It's not actually built to support heavy military machines. The way they move military machines in is on the landslide in the north into Crimea. So this is strictly, as you study it, strictly a civilian facility that Kiev used waterborne drones to blow up. I think two of them made it in. My question is, where's Russia here? You think they would have figured this one out? I guess not still. A little bit of my reticence about what Russia does and why they don't do stuff, but maybe they come in too slow, but you'd think that they would have covered themselves for it. But Ukrainian officials are cheering. The deadly terrorist attack against the Crimean bridge demonstrates cynical and monstrous behavior, Russian foreign minister has said. So I guess we could say, Russia would say that. Well, when you look at, they're just bombing a bridge that the military doesn't use and almost can't use. And then they got the road and not the rail. Like, the sun took out the rail over here, or the, I guess, global warming, Greta's Grinch goddess, I suppose, over here in the rails. It didn't take down theirs, and they run fuel on that rail over there as well. No, it went after the civilian roadway. There's no military need to go after that. So I can agree that this was a fairly heinous condition that the security service of Ukraine was involved in. The plan, and we're also hearing stories that the UK again, I think we heard the first time they went after this bridge, it was the UK had planned this as well. But again, this is just, they're gloating over this, like, this is a victory. And this is the whole other point. It's not a victory. As I said, if they took down that bridge, it's an iconic landmark that connects up that island, but the military still gets to that island. They've been using it in other ways. Security Service of Ukraine has implicitly admitted its involvement in organizing the pre-dawn attack on the Crimea Bridge. I think it was about 3 o'clock the first explosions were caught, which left two people dead and one child seriously injured. On Monday, a spokesperson for the Ukrainian Military Intelligence Department, Andrei Yusov, commented on the Crimea Bridge incident, quoting that the agency's head, Kirill Budanov, who stated that this structure is unnecessary. In other words, militarily, it's an unnecessary structure. It should not have been a target. That they're gloating over attacking it is, well, how small-minded are you to do that anyway? But it's indicative of the stories we hear that the Ukrainian military kills civilians and continues to kill civilians, notwithstanding what the West might deny. And so this is I just look and see, where is the United States? Where is its morals, right? So we kind of get where its morals is in the next story. you'd think we'd be some stand-up people, folks. I mean, I thought we were in the past. If we weren't, they sure made a good job making me think that we were. But U.S. comments on Crimea bridge attack. So the Ukrainian military is already gloating. Their special service is already gloating over bombing a civilian bridge. And the United States comments on the Crimea Bridge attack in this way. Washington is monitoring the situation with Crimea Bridge, Secretary of State Antony Blinken told reporters on Monday. He did not directly answer whether the United States supported Ukraine's attack on the bridge that killed two civilians and orphaned a 14-year-old girl. Asked about the strike on the bridge during the State Department press briefing, Blinken said, he did not have, quote, anything in particular to offer on that. That's where I shut down right there. He had nothing, not anything in particular to offer on that. Quote, this is a situation that we're monitoring, Blinken told reporters. Quote, I can say, as a general proposition, of course Ukraine has to decide how it conducts this war in defense of its territory, its people, and its freedom. How is it defending its territory against a 14-year-old girl? But this is just a morally reprehensible Blinken idiot. This is a reflection of this Biden administration. It's not because Trump is better. I'm just saying this guy here with these folks are morally reprehensible. That nothing, you just monitor and nothing comes to the surface on this? U.S. should be at least interested in the morally reprehensible acts generally and to stop them. If there's no military significance and you're killing people, that's morally reprehensible. if it has no purpose, it's morally reprehensible to even waste munitions even on it. It's not up to Ukraine to commit morally reprehensible acts. So at least there was something that the Blinken idiot should have been looking at, not just monitoring it. They should have been, proactive. They should have went in and said, no, that's not what we do. We may have a half a war, or as ludicrous as there's laws of war sounds, but we don't just kill people. We don't orphan little girls. She's not attacking your people. We don't just monitor things that, which by your lack of action, foster and encourage the moral reprehensible act. You become the agent of it by not stopping it. And then the Blinken idiot didn't discuss for us, with us, how the United States supplies the means to do that. How the UK supplies the means to do these morally reprehensible acts that we just monitor. We just sit back and monitor them, apparently. There was nothing that we could look at is telling us a ton of things about these folks in the Biden administration. Talk about psychopaths. You see, Ukraine's not waging war, but waging waste. That's what it seems to be. The battles on the ground are the cruelest. United States theater. It's all a sideshow here. Remember, I've been saying that the actual war is economic. I said we've already lost that one, too, coming out of the gate. I told you, I predicted that and came out, and we lost. And then we understand the geopolitics is that wasn't a loss in the United States necessarily directly, but that's to actually dominate the European. And I don't know where European, but could be behind a tree. But that was the main motive for that. But we got hit in the United States because we were integrated with that, the lie, the politicization of the dollar. Ukraine is not waging war. We're waging waste over there. The U.S. has already lost. It's about economics. That's how heinous this is. That's why they monitor it. Don't care if people die. The Blinken idiot, I just can't believe what they come out with. They don't even try to pretend to be responsible nation looking out and caring. Totally unnecessary. If you understand this, it's totally unnecessary what they did. And there was nothing but to monitor it. Crimea Bridge attacked part of Ukraine, U.S. PSYOPs against Russian civilians in Crimea. So we hear another purpose. It's not. That's how, again, how morally reprehensible do we get here? They know they're not winning a war by hitting that bridge. It's just to impose upon the psyche of people. And then you read through the story, and I'm going to show you exactly what they're doing. And I told you, it's not a war, it's waste, it's about an economic attack. It's right in the stories. Vasily Dandikin, the captain first rank of the Russian Navy Reserve, told Sputnik that the bridge represents a kind of sacred bond between Russia and Crimea, and the time when Crimea left Ukraine and rejoined Russia. Quote, for us, the Crimea Bridge is not just the most important economic facility, state defense, but it's also a sacred place. It's a symbol of the Crimean Spring of 2014. That's where the United States went into the Maidan massacre and threw out a democratic government. They take great their sacredness behind this for the Russians. And I told you a long time ago, listen to what these folks do and say. They come from a very foundational place, and you're not going to get them away from that. They're not just speaking, niceties here. This is important stuff to them. I think more important, it's more in them than I think any American I've ever seen on anything in my life. And a little bit of that deepness I felt when I was learning about the culture way back when I was in high school. A couple years worth of study. There's a deepness in what they do. The orthodoxy is now being brought back in. It's very, very ingrained. And it's not going to be easily defeated. Vince. This is such a thread that united us that we did not yet have a special military operation. Of course, they understand this perfectly, he said. The officer said that the main effect of the media coverage of the attack will be disrupting tourism to Crimea during the summer holidays and, quote, creating uncertainty among those who live in the peninsula. He noted that Kyiv has threatened that 800,000 of those Russians who arrived in Crimea would definitely be expelled, just as, for example, how Germans were expelled from Poland in those territories that they got as a result from the Great Patriotic War, and they will deal with the rest with collaborators and so. They want to go back to the top of that. This is a most important economic facility. So we're back to what I was saying before. This is the United States and in the West attacking Russia economically. And as I said, they've already lost, and we see the effect of that. They're fruitless attacks on a bridge that only attacks the psyche of their economy, the people around that economy. And this is as strong as the United States apparently is. But so we had evidence right here. The reason why they want to terrorize people. The United States is backing this up. We have nothing more than to do but monitor. They see nothing of importance to speak out about. But we see this is a most important economic facility that attack would disrupt. And it's right at summertime where their tourism is high. So again, there's another evidence of an economic attack. But I have to tell you, again, look at the economic attack that Putin even just recently said is boomeranged on the United States. I called it spitting into a hurricane. So this is our problem. It's like the Russians had figured this out. No, it's like Chinese finger cuffs in a way. You're not going to keep pulling and get your fingers out. You're going to have to think a little different. Well, the United States is just this prehensile tail monkey finger puller in all problems. We have nothing warring going on. It's all psychological attacks. And again, as I've said over and over, if the United States government's going to be willing to do it out there, they're doing it to you. And if any, again, governments kill people. So put the two and two together. And we're watching that monstrous and heinous response in the world that the world is not liking anymore. Now, I have said, you know, we're going to see some settling out or some changing, but always focus on the fact that it's going to that future that they want. I don't care what government's doing it, as we see Russia and China becoming now the pillars of bringing on sustainable development. And I've told you this for years, what's going to be happening. So the little old guy that I enjoy keeping track of, he's just been around for forever, older than dinosaurs, I think, G meets King Kissinger. So he's continuing to be in the news. He just had a birthday. I didn't have time to do that part that day. The Chinese president greeted the veteran U.S. diplomat who served as a United States Secretary of State between 1973 and 77 as an old friend. And so I would take stock in that and notice the importance of how he was received. They always receive their friends, they said. And so we see this guy is integral with going on there. What I found fascinating in this little story was this old friendship that is now being greeted, and what they make a comment to is Kissinger, who served under Presidents Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford in the 1970s as Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor, remarked that Sino-American relations were a matter of world peace, folks, and the progress of human society. Kissinger played a key role in the talks that put an end to the Vietnam War, as well as the normalization of relations between Washington and Beijing, with an eye to pitting China against the Soviet Union during the Cold War. This guy goes, their great friend in China goes over there. Kissinger was involved with pitting China against the Soviet Union. Now, we think the Soviet Union is not anymore around. However, remember what Kissinger just said when he changes his position relative to the Ukraine, the West, and Russia. He's an old warbird that intends to take out Russia. I found this little part right here very interesting. I would hope you do too. There's a dynamic in the world going on that's kind of a false front. And we'll watch. Maybe it'll be happening soon enough for us to see. Maybe not. This could go for a decade or two before it plays out. Maybe Kissinger will still be around. But he's an old friend of China, and he's already worked with their help to pit China against the Soviet Union. So China likes their old friends, and I don't know how much more influence they're going to have as we move this thing through. It's kind of calmed down right now. Interesting little reflection here. This guy that's been the fossil veteran, you know, diplomat in the world, I've seen a whole lot of stuff and been involved with probably every important thing, international geopolitical thing I can remember. Well, I kind of keep an eye on him just a bit. He's made some mistakes here recently, so I think his age is getting on him, but he's still received and by heads of state. And they listen to what he has to say. And so you got to keep on the track of that. But moving into China and the centralization of the power now around that and the yuan, and Kissinger showing up there, we see here IMF considers the inclusion of Chinese yuan as a currency for settlement. Now, I told you this a long time ago. They're going to normalize all this. China's going to be finally brought in. The renminbi, I think we were talking about it. Maybe it was around 2010. I talked about all these things in the IMF and again back in BRICS and the SDR, but here we have it. They're now bringing it in. Look how much time passed. Not a lot, actually. A whole lot shorter than the Kissinger's been alive. According to Julie Kozak, the spokesperson for the IMF, a significant proportion of the payment Argentina made last month, $1.1 billion out of $2.7 billion, was made using Chinese yuan. The International Monetary Fund has hinted at incorporating the Chinese yuan as an acceptable form of currency for member countries that to use in meeting their financial obligations to the fund. This proposal comes after Argentina used the yuan to repay a portion of its debt. You're watching the normalization. Read this story. This is exactly what they said was coming. This is not, like I said before, about the cryptocurrency. This is not, we're hinting at an incorporation. This is the plan to do that. They're going to make that basket of currency. Yuan has to go in, and they're going to give these countries that are having trouble the opportunity to use an alternative. And so, again, there's a cohesion going on in the future relative to all these disparate countries that have been just decimated by the dollar. But it all isn't going to, I told you, the IMF, you go to the BRICS and the World Bank has the World Bank has directors inside that that's tied to the IMF and all that's attached to the BIS. And that's where all your cryptocurrency, they're all looking for the next nickel to look and see whether or not you should spend it or not. This is the story right here. Yuan trails the dollar's lead. They're just going to tell you that there's a disparate point, but you see how Argentina is now breathing again. They have an alternative money. They have an alternative way to make transfers of value. And there's a problem with this if you have a trade balance, but the countries right now are taking that in almost like it's an absorbable loan type thing in a way as they kind of normalize this southern global shift in the world. So IMF and Yuan and China right there, right exactly. I was saying that they were saying it. I was just reporting to you over a decade ago. It slowly comes in. As they've been not so slowly coming in with the digital currency. Again, remember, this is yuan and the China and the IMF is all international transfers between countries. You and I will never be involved in that. But for central banks, they start to step up and push for digital currencies in a survey. Over 20 digital tokens regulated by central banks are expected to be in circulation worldwide by 2023. This is a little bit of an amplification from last week. And now we see the numbers coming, and as I said, a year and a half or so ago, they were the World Bank, IMF, and the Europeans, and the United States even, were saying, we're not so sure about these tokens. And you watch right here, 20 digital tokens regulated by central banks are going to be circulating worldwide by the end of this year. That's just a few more months. A growing number of central banks around the globe are working on a digital version of their national currencies. A survey of the Bank of International Settlements published last week has found. Why are they even involved? I told you they would be. Here they are, right here. They're the one making this report. Central Bank Digital Currency, or CBDC, is a digital payment instrument denominated in the national unit of account and regulated by the central bank. They are currently two types: retail, the everyday use by individuals and firms, the wholesale for transactions between financial institutions. That's the Fed now for the United States. The CBDC for Americans is not yet available, but again, they're going to make that so convenient and easy, and it's going to be a horrendous and monstrous thing to be involved in. I hope people, I don't see there's much avoidance, but I hope people will learn more quickly that they don't want to be involved in a digital currency for so many reasons. And again, the main killer here is the fact that you're utilizing a device that's created by a private party that has set up a certain type of ethic for themselves, that if you insult that, they will shut you off. And that the guidance we have for that is the 17 goals of sustainable development, the ESGs they call them now, for an easy way to get that to roll off of people's tongue. And if you see, again, the moneyed financial groups are not running with that cover anymore. They realize it's coming to an end. They can't actually promote those things, and so you see the big financiers booting that and moving out, distancing themselves a bit from it, while they're going to hand it to you. Again, this is another survey. We can go through all the numbers. I think that somehow there's interest in some of the numbers, but for the broadcast, it's just a little bit tedious. I think the players are most important, that I just mentioned the BIS would be involved in all this. Here they are. They're making the next study. They're paying attention. And so the central banks are key here. Remember, the central banks are they're in a new gold rush. They're buying the gold. They're likely, if I understand this right, they need to show gold reserves in order to be part of the underlying gold backing for the SDR. They have to have a little bit, their part of that, throughout the system to give a little bit of credibility to these things. So the big horror behind it for people will be the central bank is in control. They regulate. They regulate how it will be used. And we see here now the story of, again, how this was coming out. I don't know why this is even a story, why someone who was designing it didn't know, but there's the news here. Brazil CBDC allows government to freeze funds. The developer discovered that was going to be what they could be used for. The guy behind which I was seeing, he didn't have to be a developer. Just watch how it works. All of you, anybody who's paying attention, could see how this is going to be a dastardly thing. Dangerous levels of control is said in the lead. In a disquieting discovery, the Brazilian Central Bank Digital Currency, CBDC, is reportedly designed to feed with a feature enabling the government to freeze user funds and adjust balances. Isn't it, again, this is not news. I'm just saying it's in play. This is not even a question. This is not the year and a half ago. We don't even know if we like these things. No, this is already running. This was already running. I told you then. The revolution emerged after Pedro Magalhães, a prominent blockchain developer and founder of Aurora Labs, managed to decode the underlying technical details of the CBDC. Magalhães analyzed the application programming interface, API, available on the Monetary Authority's GitHub account. His findings spotlighted a potential controversial control level for the Brazilian government, yet there has been an ominous silence from officials in response to his discovery. Now, just to jump to the point of it, this was supposed to be, it was a reason why you should be able to do that in certain types of trades. You need to shut down a trade, a connection to the chain in order to do something with it. What they found out is that the government did not reject that they could shut it down at all, completely. And that's where he didn't understand that was possible. I don't know why a guy behind a woodshed could figure it out, but the developer didn't. But pretty fascinating. What people are in it don't see it. Kind of an interesting, what can I say, human nature thing? Maybe too close to something? You work as a dupe for this system? How easy it is to do so? So initially, Magalhães, who exposed the issue in Lincoln, LinkedIn, for educational purposes, speculated that the freeze feature would be confined to DeFi and CeFi operations, wherein a balance freeze might be warranted to execute a smart contract operation. However, he was informed that the central bank held discretionary power to invoke this feature as and when deemed necessary. And that's exactly what I've been saying. When you violate the bank's or the issuer's ethics, which is sustainable development ultimately, they can choose to shut you down so that they are not insulting that ethic. And so moved on now to what the banks are doing in this control. We see now the government of Brazil is their bank is having discretionary power to do these things, these cutoffs, and it's gone. We go back to someone who had his bank accounts throttled a week ago or so. A bank's reason for booting Nigel Farage revealed. Coutts told the UKIP founder his account was closed for financial reasons, but an internal document says otherwise. So here we have, right up front, we have just a bunch of lying going on, deception, over someone's money. And this is right out in the open. This is before digitization comes on to do this automatically, your AI. You just shut this right off. You won't, and think about how you're not going to get the information, since it's sitting in a third-party member that has no requirement to uphold any rights, if you will. The rights you have is the right of agreement and use, just like you don't have any rights to what the information you put on the internet is. And then they have a right to determine how that's going to be used or if it's going to be used at all. UK bank Coutts dropped British politician Nigel Farage as a customer, not because his accounts contained insufficient funds, but because his social and political views were incompatible with the, quote, values, according to the 40-page dossier compiled by the bank. Now, I don't know what more to say. This is exactly what I've been telling you. That's just going to move into a digital AI-controlled environment. That's going to be your future right there. You will not. Your values could be seen as an insult to their obligations to uphold the ESGs, the third party. Not because of the insufficient funds, not because you're being good about your accounts and being responsible. No, it's because of your social and political views. Well, we have social credit, right? This is all right there. So we see the evidence. I don't know what more to say about that. They can seize your it's not your money now. If I send an email out, I mean a Twitter, and I said your money at the second your money, it's our money and then our money, but it's not. It's already not our money in the fiat. When you get into this, you don't have money. You have an obligation to control your behaviors such that it doesn't get curtailed and regulated by the issuer of the token of your citizenship. Your token serfdom. Cash is king. Go start using it. Insist on it everywhere because cash is king. Token serf. That's what last week's broadcast was entitled when I got done thinking about it. So what else is in the world of value and seized? 26,000 liters of smuggled fuel seized in the Persian Gulf. What was interesting about this was that the seizure of this seized diesel was also the ships that the United States was attempting to protect. And they protected one and they didn't protect the other. That's how the Iranians captured it and found it was moving smuggled materials. Commander of the Maritime Guards of Kazakhstan, Providence 2nd Brigadier Loftfalia Pakbaz, noted that a Maritime Guards identified and seized a smuggled cargo of diesel fuel in the Bandar Mashhar in the Persian Gulf. 26,000 liters of smuggled diesel fuel have been seized in this regard, he said, adding that the fuel smugglers were trying to transfer the illicit cargo to Persian Gulf states. And this is what's going on in the world. The seizure, you can understand that when you are cut off of your CBDC account, that you have created you're trying to smuggle, if you will, your views into their system, and they'll seize it. And so this is a nation doing this with these diesel fuels that are being smuggled and protected. The smuggling is protected by the United States. So what I was looking at in this one, the ship was detained by Iran, was found to be carrying the illegal cargo. So by freedom of navigation, the United States means the freedom to pirate. So they're protecting the smugglers. The United States Navy is protecting the privateer running diesel like they might run alcohol. And Iran is doing its sovereignty thing. And we have that in the United States Constitution, but we also have a provision in the United States Constitution that prohibits the United States from being able to agree to stop piracy. So here we have the freedom of navigation that the United States uses to say that they're going to keep those lanes open to smuggle this stuff is authorized by the Constitution pursuant to the letter marquee and reprisal provision. If anyone thought this country was established by a peaceful or to bring peace, the nation. And so we see the marquee and reprisal. This is a form of it. It's not identical since we don't know the ships and where they were coming from, we don't know they were not foreign ships paid by the United States to smuggle this stuff along. They were protected by that. The reprisal here is that Iran is doing, in one context, is the action against enemies of the state. The common understanding of reprisal is the seizure of property. Sometimes a person as a foreign state as a redress for an injury committed by that state. So we see some pretty high international law and constitutional law showing us, if we look back at our own founding documents, that this function, this piracy function through privateers, is constitutional. The Navy knows all about it, and when Iran tries to do it, the United States Navy tells us that Iran is doing some pretty bad things, and we tend to believe as a society that that's true, and all they're doing is what the United States would do on the one hand, but we forget to look at the United States actually supporting smugglers. And I guess there might be some people that totally hate Iran, might say, oh good, that's good. The point is we're looking at a dynamic that's a hypocrisy as well. In the United States, supposedly being a beacon of freedom and let people live in democracy, no, the military gets involved, it does what it will. And that's part of the condition of the United States. That's why we call it the empire right now. That's all it does. It goes and hurts things. It causes things to be hurt. It steals. It plunders. And so we hear Iran's doing all bad things, but they just captured a boat that was being protected by the United States military. I think on this one there might have been some aircraft involved, showing you how futile aircraft used to protect this freighter was, but they were stopped that boat and found illegal cargo on it. So again, we're back to what kind of a nation has the United States become or always been that we think so highly of it? And I think that's a reflection on our people, the people of the United States. So we got a lot of good people, but our voice is not being heard. And then we didn't say, well, if it's not being heard and we're right, then we haven't stood up. And we continue to allow that wrong to happen. And what's happening, it's a reflection coming back. We're paying for it. We're paying for it with that economic tornado, hurricane that's slapping us in the face, the boomerang that's hitting us in the chops that even Russia recognizes, that Putin recognizes, and they prepared for. In other words, you can anticipate how this works. This wasn't magic. So how does the United States resolve some of this? It doesn't. It just keeps becoming more militaristic. U.S. deploying F-35s against Iran. Washington has accused Iran of a series of destabilizing actions in recent months. Just go back to those freighters that are running the smuggled fuels, the petrol fuels that are protected by the United States. That's destabilizing to Iran. That's why they went and got them. So here, because Iran did what it has right to do, the United States now deploys F-35s against them. The United States military will send additional fighter jets and naval assets to the Middle East in an effort to counter Iran, the Pentagon said, citing two alarming incidents in the Strait of Hormuz earlier this month. Well, I think this is going on all the time, but now it's escalating. The United States, I guess, doesn't like that competition either. But it's they call it destabilizing actions in Iran, saying the same thing. You're destabilizing our world here. I mean, I'm pausing here for us to think about this. It's, I don't know where we went as a nation to even think we could allow it, and that we see lots of people believe we have the right to do this. I don't know where that mentality comes from. If we wanted a peaceful world, but I don't know that we do. And I think we hear Kissinger talking about they wanted a peaceful world with China. It's not the type, we think, people think about peace different than nations do. And I can only suggest that it's not going to be peaceful when they bring in things like CBDCs and control your life. They will say you're peaceful because you're not behaving right, but it's not a peaceful world. It's austerity. It's being told you can only have so certain types of clothes and so many of them. It's being told it's not peaceful to my mind that you're wondering whether or not you're going to freeze to death because the thermostat's just been knocked down for the winter. It's not peaceful to have to contemplate how you're going to manage, how much water you're going to use, how many tea bags you're going to have to use over the next 3 days so you don't throw carbon waste out. That this is not the peace they talk about, the peace that a nation speaks to, looks like what the United States Department of War turned into, called the Defense Department. It's this Orwellian doublespeak thing. So when Iran does a reprisal stops the destabilizing effort of smugglers, the United States says that they're wrong, and they're going to issue. And then the United States supposed taxpayer and the military industrial complex puts heavy, expensive machinery around, and in a large part, a lot of that goes nowhere, doesn't it? It's like what we're seeing in Russia. They can't back down. It's coming. I mean, we've been told, and they've been restating it. You're up against countries that cannot back down. It's their very existence. Russia military responds to U.S. drone harassment complaints. The Pentagon was told to keep its UAVs away from the Syrian airspace. The Russian Air Force is conducting joint exercises with its Syrian counterparts, so parts of the country's airspace remains off limits to the United States-led forces, the Defense Ministry reiterated after Pentagon accused Russia of harassing American drones for the third time this week. Harassing. You getting this, folks? What they're doing with AI, with machines. The Russian side once again expresses concern about the systematic violations of deconfliction protocols related to the flights of unmanned aerial vehicles of the so-called International Anti-Terrorist Coalition, the deputy head of Russia Reconciliation Center for Syria, Rear Admiral Oleg Gurnov, said in a statement. The three MQ drones were once again harassed by a Russian fighter aircraft while flying over Syria for the third day in a row, said U.S. Air Force Central Lieutenant General Alex Grinkiewicz. And so, harassed. They're harassing. You see how the United States anthropomorphizes machines. The machines are harassed now. And yet, we're in airspace and in geographical territory that's in the area of another sovereign. And in this story, you're going to hear the Russians talking, but again, the deconfliction protocols area that they talk about, I think Russia is wrong. The United States is wrong. These folks are, except for Russia being given permission to fly there, they're in Syria's sovereign airspace. And at some point, I have to give that some value. We're not going to recognize sovereign space at all. We're just another, again, there's no border. And then we have, anybody would have the ability to claim anything. That's what the United States does. And it's not necessary, it's not right. I don't know what I'm saying necessary. It's not right. This is all, the United States government is unlawfully in Syria's sovereign airspace. And Russia and this and the United States are wrong. There isn't any actual deconfliction zone. That's also made up. And that's made up as a compromise because the United States is there unlawfully, just flat unlawfully. So in my case, in my mind, Russia really misrepresents that there's a deconfliction zone if they agree that Syria has the airspace it's supposed to have. And I just want to highlight it again, harassing a machine. That anthropomorphizes the machine. That makes it more acceptable. And over time, we start agreeing that machines have a characteristic like emotion. Something maybe the psychopath won't tap his toe on when it's the emotional part of the music. The AI will, and they will have given the language and the repeated seed drops like they're doing right now. Somehow a reaper drone can be harassed. It has consciousness. I find these insidious little programming notes here. U.S. considering military options against Russia in Syria. Why? It's not their airspace. It's not their country. We know the story. I don't want to get all into it. But this is where we have the United States sticking its nose where it shouldn't. It demands of others what it denies, it allows to itself what it denies in others. And in the case of the example of Iran, Iran's doing what it could. It's doing what the United States does by constitutional right. Washington and Moscow have argued over U.S. drone flights in the country's airspace. The U.S. is weighing a military response to Russia's presence in the skies over Syria, a Pentagon official told the Associated Press on Friday. While the Syrian government wants the U.S. to leave the country, Washington insists it will fly its drones with impunity. Now, they tried that over there in Iran, and Iran shot that I think it was a Reaper down. So this is not absolute anymore. And the United States keeps sticking its nose where it shouldn't be. And I don't know how the United States can become an example in the world to follow. And that extends back to the economics. How are we, as a people, the United States, going to be able to get out of this when the United States starts making enemies everywhere? Where are the people going to stop? When are we going to step up and start... I guess like in the 60s, not necessarily like the hippie, if you will, the flower power, but where we stand up and our Vietnam War, we decide that we've had enough. It's time to, let's have another stint of peace, unlike most of the life of the United States government over time. Most of its life has been at war. We were told, the Founding Fathers said it was supposed to be limited. Don't reach out and touch anybody. Keep to yourself. But no, the place was wired in a certain way and taken over by I would think they're weak. They're psychopaths. They shouldn't be where they are, but they are, and they understand how to take advantage. So the United States is considering military options, and I want to point this out because there's the ramping up. Military options is going to require more material. More material, more personnel, and I told you a long while back, I don't know how long ago it was, watch your sons and daughters. For these frivolous, stupid psyops, the soldier of the United States is going to be set out in places and die. As we're finding out, the mercenaries are being put in a meat grinder, they don't make it out. And again, the special operations from Russia's side is a grinder. They said they're getting rid of the military capacity, they're getting rid of an ideological capacity in the Nazi thing, notwithstanding it's been denied. That's what Russia's there to do. And so at some level, I'm not sure how you do, that's not a real war, and they're there just to take out the military of the other side. And they've got the ability to outdo what the West can do, what Europe can do, what they're capable of. Ukraine's Zelensky brings home Azovstal commanders from Turkey. This, I think, is an underreported big story. And I think we saw a little bit of a reflection of the problem. That, remember, Turkey is in NATO, but I'm not sure yet it's in part of the EU. And I don't know that it ever will be, but that's their goals. The point was that in this story, Russia denounces the soldiers' return, accusing Kyiv and Ankara of violating a prisoner exchange deal under which the men were to remain in Turkey until the end of the war. And this is where Russia had stopped, taken these fighters out of Azovstal, put them in Turkey, get them out, didn't kill them, didn't put them in prisoner of war camps, didn't brutalize them, didn't send them back because they didn't want to fight, and they were not supposed to go back to Ukraine until the war was over, or the special operations was over, and Ankara, Erdogan, agreed. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has returned home from a visit to Turkey with five commanders of Ukraine's former garrison of Mariupol, a move Russia and said violated the terms of prisoner exchange deal engineered last year. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Saturday that Ankara had promised under the exchange agreement to keep the men in Turkey and complained that Moscow had not been informed of the move. You need to read this a little bit more. This is a dynamic, but this sets up an insult to Russia that I think we could predict might come out of this. It also sets up a real problem geopolitically, and it sets up Russia won't forget this one for sure, but there was an immediate response that they did do, and you could almost predict the bye-bye grain deal. And what that was going to do is shift any responsibility over to Turkey to protect from mines the ships that move the grain from Ukraine back out into the world, or from Russia there that they are controlling into the world. And so guess what happens right after they got slighted by Erdogan? You're having to hear a story that Turkey rejects Ukraine's appeal to escort ships in Black Sea after grain deal ends. Russia just said, no, we're not going to do it anymore. You stab us in the back, you take care of those ships. And then Turkey wasn't willing to do it. So there's a very interesting, and then you have to understand, historically, Russia and Turkey are just enemies. I don't even know how they're talking anymore right now, but they've had more wars, I think, than any other pair of countries. That's historic with these folks. And so this is a bigger deal. I don't know where it ends up meaning and going to, but we see Russia reacts immediately, and Turkey's not willing to pick it up. And so we have a potential grain embargo, if you will. Not that it's such an embargo, but the ships have to go through mined areas that the Ukraine did, trying to protect its ports. And so, and obviously the shipping doesn't want to go through and risk itself. But Ukraine's grain ships transiting the Black Sea are unlikely to get escorts from Turkish warships, according to reports of the U.S. media, after the Black Sea grain deal allowing for the export of Ukrainian and Russian grain and fertilizers was allowed to expire on Monday. Kiev has been struggling to find ways to get its product to market. One option was apparently to appeal to Ankara for help, but the NATO ally is unlikely to take such a highly risky move, according to the official familiar with the matter. Again, I'll just tie it over. Risky, why? If they got the minesweepers and all, it's not surely shouldn't be that risky. What it is, it's now fluff the feathers of Russia. I don't know how intelligent this act was, but Erdogan's got his knee. He just got elected. He's like this. He's going to run to the end of his time there and be able to make some things. He doesn't have to worry about too much as far as an electorate. And there was a little concern of what he might do. Well, as soon as he got into office, he started to really act like Europe. And Russia says, you better be careful on how you act like Europe. Those folks don't want you, and you should remember that. And so we're going to get the word about how adamant Russia is. You start messing with it, and it finds you on the other side of what they need to protect themselves. They're gonna do whatever it takes to make sure that they're gonna survive. And you see real quickly, I think it's the fourth largest military in the world is not willing to take on the liability Russia was doing to make sure those mines didn't hurt those grain freighters. But Russia will never abandon goals of a military operation. So really put this make this a certainty in our thoughts. All the game, the noise we're hearing on the psyops that are going on the West, you're dealing with a bunch of people that are capable to assert what they've just said. Now, I told you this a long time ago when we started this, and I told you one broadcast I made an observation, the next broadcast Russia made a statement and corrected my error. And when I saw that, I told you, and I said, you better, this is something I didn't notice, and here they're telling us we better take this serious. Russia will never abandon the goals of military operation. Russia's objectives in Ukraine are non-negotiable and existential. This is not even a question, a joke, or anything. They're now telling everybody, go ahead and do what you will. We're going to be here for the till you're gone. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov explained on Wednesday at an annual meeting with domestic non-governmental organizations and nonprofits, quote, we can't and won't ever give up the goals that were announced as part of the special military operation, Lavrov said, adding that that Moscow had warned for years against setting up Ukraine as a direct military threat on Russia's doorstep. There were plans to create military bases in the Sea of Azov and in Crimea, and the regime that had proven its neo-Nazi essence more than once was constantly encouraged to exterminate everything Russian, culture, education, the media, and the Russians themselves. In those lands, their glorious ancestors lived and built cities for centuries. Again, long-established civilization here, same reflecting the Crimean military guy's discussion about what Crimea means to Russia and the Russian people. We're seeing them stated again. They'll never abandon this goal. The peace deal was thrown into the dustbin of history is what caused this statement from Lavrov to succinctly state the two things they have been saying, but now what's emphasizing here is the first word, the first phrase is non-negotiable. They had that as an afterthought before. Now this thing is non-negotiable and existential. So as we listen to the Western world, whatever the media wants to say, please take a moment and think about who we're up against right now, what they are going to do what they're told. There's a word for that, and I'm sorry, it didn't come to me. Never abandon. These folks aren't going away, and any of these things that we tend to do is, again, showing the fruitlessness of it. It's folly to continue. It's why we sent sent the cluster bombs over to Ukraine as a waste place, putting people at risk. Russia will take that. They will take that. They'll clean that up. But eventually, the United States is not going to be there. Eventually, none of these folks are going to be there. And they'll sit there as long as they need to. And they're going to grind the personnel and machinery down. And then Putin's already got, with this Prigozhin thing, he has the public on his side. I told you that was a big deal for any leader to make sure that he has his people on his side. He has that. And he's doing it very methodically about how he keeps the losses down. They've still got losses, but he keeps it down. And then they promote how well they're doing, and they're not doing so bad. They're coming out of their economics failure or strife much, much, much better than the United States is or the West. So these folks aren't going away, and if we want to continue to listen and be quiet against the media, keep promoting the objectives of Ukraine, the democracy of Ukraine, the battle lab of the UK, United States, monitoring morally reprehensible activities. I'm not so sure that your sons and daughters don't go to war at some point. And these people, Russia is not, I've told you before, I've seen it in them when I studied about Russia and the people. You look at what they've lost 26 million people during World War II and prevailed. I don't know why the United States even thinks about this, but here we go. They'll never abandon, and you know what comes out of the United States? Not let's keep peace, not let's back and rethink this thing. No, ordering the selective reserve and certain members of the individual ready reserve of the armed forces to active duty. Now, some of you military folks, is a Title 10, I'm looking up and I see military right there in Title 10. Know what this means. I really don't know more than I see that people are going to be pulled out for active duty. Why? Where? Why is the United States going, look at the stories I just talked about. Iran, Syria, Ukraine, going up against China, I said a long time ago, your sons and daughters are going to be out there fighting for things that are ludicrous and useless in the face of what the reality is, like bombing a civilian bridge that Russia doesn't use for its military because the United States and Ukraine think that hitting an economic facility is going to kill that nation. By authority vested by him, Feeblenomics, dude. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution of the United States, United America, including sections 121 and 12304 of Title 10, United States Code, I hereby determine that it is necessary to augment the active armed forces of the United States for the effective conduct of Operation Atlantic Resolve in and around the United States European Command's area of responsibility. Foreign countries going over there, whatever, foreign entanglements. So as I've been saying, Russia's going to be there a while, and they've been grinding down to the last Ukrainian. Now we're getting ready reserves of the United States soldier up and going. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I'm not so sure. The psychopaths in Washington, those that will monitor morally reprehensible acts, are sending your sons and daughters. I don't know what the Atlantic has to do with it, but there we go. Get it a powerful name, I suppose. Give it some connection to NATO. And here it is, developing larger and larger. So some group of soldiers coming into active duty. If someone was just taken out of active duty, at least for a very short while, and it found this interesting, just a little bit. And the stories that went around it, and all, again, the deception that's built into public perception. I guess it fascinates me to watch what governments do. Israel's, not the man, the so-called state, not the Israelites, but that pseudo-invasion that happened in Palestine, not Ohio. Israel's Netanyahu fitted with heart monitor a day or so after we heard, oh, he was so fine, he felt weak and walked his way into the hospital. He's fine. Well, they're still going to say he's fine, but now he's got a heart pace monitor on. The PM was rushed to the hospital after reportedly fainting at home. And that made me think, I wonder, was he jabbed? Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been fitted with a heart implant for monitoring cardiac arrhythmia and released from the hospital after undergoing a series of tests. The Prime Minister was said to be feeling very good upon receiving the results of his medical test, which aimed to rule out any causes of ill health the previous day. Doctors of Netanyahu insisted his heart was in excellent condition. Our diagnosis at the end of all the tests performed, including laboratory tests, is that the reason for the hospitalization was dehydration. Hospitalization? The hospital said that the statement on Sunday, adding that the leader's heart was completely normal. Okay, I guess. Fine. Well, good. Maybe just it is dehydration. So, folks, take note. It's a heat, hot, drink your water. It can have effect on you. I think it actually does hurt your heart a bit, too. But I had a thought there about that. So I talked about the fact that he was just out in the sun, maybe didn't have a hat or something. And then I started to think he was without a hat and without water, and I started thinking about all the people in Africa that are without a hat and without water. And we don't hear much of them fainting. And that kind of got me going into thinking, I wonder if we're, does this prove that he's not hereditarily, genetically, or ancestrally from Palestine? But actually from locations north? Is this indicating that the folks that claim to be from that land really aren't? I just wondered, what's going on here? Also, the other thing that he's putting in now, those judicial reforms, people are not liking it. I guess there's a few hundred thousand people that don't like it, but there's quite a few million Israelis now. And so maybe that's just a drop in the bucket. But I find this interesting too. He has this event, even dehydration, where he hasn't had it before, all at the same time. So I'm wondering, just looking in, how much more stress is going on in this than maybe meets the eye. And I don't have the stories on it, and I don't really talk too much more about it, but we see that the United States is engaging with the training and drilling with Israel, and that can only be telegraphing what's something in Iran. As we saw, the F-35s are being brought in, that you're claiming, now the United States claiming the Atlantic operation, getting new forces ready to go. It's just a few hours travel to get over into where that area is as well. I also understand, I think in Syria, they're bringing more troops back. I thought I saw 2,500. So the United States foments these altercations. They blame other countries for doing what the United States does. And the other countries, if they're sovereign, have a right to do. And we're watching countries with people like Russia, who are now asserting the very same things. But those nations have the ability to defend themselves. And I guess there would be a debate on whether or not in a war, one or country or the other, if we're really in war, could actually defeat the United States. I don't know. But the size of our military, I understand, is pretty awesome. But we're not doing much as a nation either. We also see the problems that these folks, these nations that understand, that are, they see non-negotiable existential threats, are not backing down anymore. You would think, except that it makes sense that these folks are insane in the government. When you see this type of resistance and capacity to defend themselves, and you don't stop, maybe those of us on this other end should be looking at that and saying more vociferously, and maybe better than that, whatever we can get a point in and make a point to get some action done, not more congressional studies, but start to get pulled together what's needed to do to rein these folks in. It might become a really important thing to consider. And I don't know, I'm a little troubled by watching this rollout here of ordering the reserves up. When you look at the lack of, I want to keep calling it lunacy, the lack of the basis that we need to be fighting. The things that we allow as a nation, the United States allows to just monitor reprehensible acts and not step up to say, well, yeah, we want to support you, Ukraine, but we don't want you to do morally reprehensible acts. There is a standard here. And it almost sounds dumb when you say law of war. I've always had a chuckle about there's laws in war. Okay, they're not maybe so, they're maybe not so held together faithfully and fidelity in the extreme, but there is this honor that, somewhat of an honor that goes by. We see some of that in Ukraine. I wish we saw more of both sides, honestly, but we see some of that. But it's degraded to where we have Secretary of State, Blinken, making comments of monitoring morally reprehensible acts without setting the bar where the United States should be setting that bar. And by not setting that bar, it allows what the United States says is its enemy, and let's say China or Russia, which Kissinger was working to take down with China in the 70s. When you see these dynamics and these nations are not going to put up with it anymore, we're in a much more contentious world. And in one regard, I'm not so sure I'm not sure Russia certainly wants to fight, and they will just like ignore. They're setting up something to be able to ignore all the bullies, which I think may be certainly the best course, because they're like the porcupine. The United States is not moving right into Russia because it wants to take them down. The United States is not moving in because Kissinger has always wanted really to go after Russia. So there's a somewhat of a stabilizing force in the demeanor that's going on, that it behooves both Russia and China. But I think part of that is also driven, as I've told you. When we see the CBDCs going, the United States is bringing one in. They're not doing it. IMF is involved. Let's go back to that a little bit. And you see that last week's discussion that I did on the broadcast shows that they're positioning Russia and China to be working together mutually to advance global governance. You have to realize the economic war that's on is actually the same. It's a balancing war, and we may have the two new power structures, but it's still going to be managed by the same people. But when it moves in and transforms to that, your power, my listener, your power will have been taken away by then. If you don't demand, like I've been saying, even fiat hand-to-hand currency, the war of hand-to-hand combat currency going on around your neighborhood, and keep that flowing, the move and transition to digital and the control of your behavior, it's so insidious, I can't even go, my mind just kind of flips out a little bit. All the little places that they'll be able to keep track when you've allowed, because you've allowed, I say you, I'm not judging you, it's us, when we have allowed these morally reprehensible indiscretions to just monitor or not stop, they're doing that to us. They have no scruple about protecting us. You are going to be fodder for that as well. And your choice now that you use by your hand and your deed will help to protect that. And so even though fiat is still down, and I'm not really a promoter of that, it's so much better than where they're going that if we can get any people to keep just using cash, at least in the interim, I don't know how people are going to get used to going back to silver, but at any rate, regardless of that problem, the lack of ability for them to track you, the lack of ability to impose upon you an ideology that is foreign to you, but because they have a leash around your, the leash around your throat that they can control you, is a pretty ominous condition. And the nations right now, Russia and China, they're moving, but you look at their internals, they're all putting everybody underneath the same, their people are going underneath the same controls as people anywhere. So everyone's American in that regard. If you think American is really, we think of the best nature of America. All the nations are going into the Soviet. They're going into this UN sustainable development. It doesn't matter what we think because they know us better than ourselves, and I've been watching. Oh, there's a few of us, but we're that few. We can see maybe 2/3 of the population doesn't like the cluster bombs in Washington D.C. sending cluster bombs to Ukraine. But they still agree, generally, to the future that's wanted for them in their habits. So that little bitty glimpse right there that there is still a will, despite the fractured democracy, it was 50-50, if you will, go by the parties, or some difference less than 50-50 for the other, the unaligned political. Despite that breakdown, 2/3, we can get the population of 2/3 of the population of Americans to do something in one direction. Despite the jab, and that's kind of an interesting observation too, where we see Russia is a thumbs down with jab people and not so much with the unvaccinated, the reprehensible unvaccinated. We see though there's a cohesion of 2/3 against cluster bombs. I'm not encouraged necessarily, but we still have an ability to come together. 2/3, if you go to Congress, is enough to change stuff. If we can translate that force and effect, if it takes stopping cluster bombs, then maybe that's a start. Again, I guess we've heard find the common ground. Well, I don't like that phrase, but if that's what the commonality of just not liking cluster bombs, if that gives us people together, so then maybe we can move ourselves to the more important stuff for us, not even be a place where that even has to be a question, not impose ourselves under the color of democracy to destroy a democracy, and then have it be what capitalism isn't. It's just the takedown of people for profit, which is in debt systems. This is all integrated, a very large problem, but it all kind of starts with us. So, for some reason I found this interesting relative to Netanyahu and going down. And yes, I know heat exhaustion and or the dehydration. Yes, it happens. But I can't help but thinking the unnaturalness of these folks that Netanyahu represents, the Zionist, the political view, that can be from anywhere in the world, come to a place, call it their own, and they're not natural to it. And so I just think that's an interesting reflection going on. And so we have, let's keep going back on to that point of it's not natural. And Russia here is what's natural to them is non-negotiability in the principles that are being violated by everyone that's coming against them and that existential threat. That's a certainty. So anything we hear of the West talking sideways to that is wasted words. Those folks are going to get your sons and daughters killed. I don't know how to, it keeps coming back to me. This is what this was set up to do. I don't know if it's that big global war coming or not. What I'm saying is that the only out that a nation that's going down economically is to go to war. Now, I think Gerald Celente comes and talks about that, where they have no answers, they take you to war. It's going to be up to y'all to decide ahead of time, I mean, really quickly here with these ready reserves coming out. I think it's going to be up to y'all to really make it vocal that is going to have to stop. Now, whether that goes for some of you doing elections and this and that, I don't know. But we also know that direct action, phone calls, making a stink, if you will, and having those numbers, it used to work. I haven't heard too much. The first network that I broadcast on, we used to be pretty active that way. We used to mobilize quite a few people. It was about the time the Fed started up as well. They started up just a little bit after I started broadcasting and then also doing these daily types of promotion to get people to do things and call Congress, call the senators. That seemed to have an effect. And so I think we're coming to the day where if we don't do that, we're going to, I don't know, I'm looking at this here, armed forces to active duty. And we hear, you know, this Operation Atlantic Resolve. Resolve to do what? What are they resolving to do? Has not been declared. Well, it sure sounds kind of cool. But this is people dying. If something goes wrong, this is people that are going to be dying. It's your sons and daughters in America. And then goes the Kanitakistan. All those folks go die. All the people in Europe, they start dying. Against they call an enemy in Russia that doesn't care anymore. Because you've insulted them so badly. You've become a threat so dangerous that they can't give up. It's not necessarily backed in the corner either. And this is the interesting thing about Russia, what they've done. The same thing with China. China's maybe even a bigger threat in a way, if I can call them a threat. They have the better capacity, I think. Again, it wasn't the ruble going into the consideration. It was the yuan. And again, the pivot to China that Obama did, I told you that was what was going to happen. That was there. We're talking about the SDRs. And so we're looking at the transformation's happening, and that's not really a scary thing. It's that the United States, how it responds, makes things scary. You're going over there to not make war, but make waste. But I don't know, you're just a lunatic. You're a psychopath. And that's what the leadership of America is allowing. While we talk about UFOs, while we talk about disclosure, even waiting for the last shreds of information on who killed Kennedy. These folks are setting up to destroy what they can in the world. And finally, the world is saying, enough is enough. You look at going back over, I'm looking at my tab now, thinking about this. Look at Ukraine, Look at what Russia, the insult there. They said, we're not protecting this. And all that grain can't go, whatever nonsense is behind the marketing of it, who got what, all that grain doesn't go somewhere to feed people or even feed the animals. And you can just watch this, the future they want, this future destitution, future food security, because they tried to say they were going to protect it. Again, when the government tries to protect something, it's not there to do that. Food insecurity will be insecurity in food for everywhere. You see this playing out in the people. People everywhere start to suffer if they're not already suffering. And so, I don't know. I keep looking at my tabs today, this week, and I don't see the response we need to do. And in some part, that's a natural thing that's being exploited. We're too busy trying to keep up. We're too busy to try to keep our own. And I told you, it was like when the jabs and going after your little ones, when you're taking care of your little one, that becomes the focus of your world. You don't care about politics. You don't care about, you don't care about much of anything else. That's another control pattern. They'll find something in you that you believe is that important, that existential threat, and you'll go protect it. But that's being used against us. And the more things they have in the world that they can pull this off on, the easier it becomes. The more we get people buying into the CBDC, spread the word. All I can say is spread the word. If what I'm exposing to you about what the danger is maybe too abstract, find something that isn't abstract for you that you can communicate about how dastardly this digital technocratic control system is. It's going to be done like drugs. They're going to give you a little bit up front. It may even be give you a little bit up front for a long time, and then the switch gets pulled. And they'll be able to, by that time they're watching you, they know everything about you. And little subtle things, like we get the little stories about, I was talking about something with somebody, and then I looked down at my phone and there was an ad. That's how they're going to do it to your economy, to how you function in the world, how you use those tokens. Eventually, it just gets adjusted. And you become susceptible to it as well, given what? AI makes more medicines, right? They incorporate how to biologically make you more receptive to an outcome, as we see the study was done in 2022. And I think I talked about it. I just want to remind us that they can, like they did told us about the dragonfly. They needed to put something in the dragonfly that would receive the package, the electronic package that they put in, so that they could remotely control the function flight of that dragonfly. They had to prepare the body of the dragonfly with a chemical in order for that to happen. Because I don't see much difference in what's going on with our society and medicine and what they put in the food and those PFASs that the European Union won't cut out now, the biological warfare against us, all for control and profits. It's quite amazing what's coming against the people. And quite amazing to me that we're not quite yet responding. A few of us, but not necessarily enough. So I hope I said something today. I took a little bit of a downturn here at the last bit of this broadcast just looking at my tabs today and saying, man, we see it right there in front of us. But what are we going to do to either stop it or beat again, just not be on the track that train comes down? But when we get to economy, and global economy, and global structures of control, not many can escape. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature World.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Can of whoop ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop ass.